Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Shae Lucero is a businesswoman, a mother of two, and a former Miss Indian World. She also just completed a local TEDx talk that focused on a powerful and personal message about confronting racism. It's a lesson in relying on culture when dealing with anger and mistreatment by others. This cultural advocate finds ways to educate and build bridges through her interactions with others. We're back with Shae Lucero, our Native in the Spotlight, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native communities across the country are investing in growing the workforce for young Native people. Many tribal nations continue to face a number of challenges in this area, including high unemployment rates. Yet, efforts to address job training and employment for young Native people are underway nationally, statewide, and locally. In South Dakota, the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation on the Pine Ridge Reservation is building power for the community to create sustainable change and work to end poverty on the reservation. In our State of Change series, Jim Kent takes a look at Thunder Valley's workforce development strategy.
All these big swales and the concrete culvert kind of inlets and outlets that Percy's putting in, that's all for the stormwater.
After sharing a prayer and smudge, 15 Lakota men and women are gathered in the conference room at the 34-acre site of Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation. This is part of their regular morning preparatory meeting that takes place each day before starting work at Thunder Valley's construction site. Matthew Kuhl oversees the program that's building 21 homes here for tribal members.
The Workforce Development Program is a 10-month training program for young Ogallala Lakota folks between the ages of 18 to 26. They have the opportunity to complete a GED if they don't have that coming into our program, or we provide assistance in Associates of Arts and Bachelor's programs, and simultaneously they're learning the building trades in the form of green building techniques.
So, completing your education and learning a trade that you can use either near your home on the reservation or anywhere across the country. Marie Killswarrior is one of those learning a trade. She arrived on site with no experience and a dream of rebuilding her grandmother's house. 2 years later, she's the assistant construction trainer at Thunder Valley.
I've come to find out that I really enjoy doing carpentry. And so I have never swung a hammer before, I have never read a tape, and yet here I am running layout, doing measurements, making these cuts, you know, and just helping putting up these houses, and I'm still in the learning process, but I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Thunder Valley's workforce development program has seen an increase in attendance and completion rates over the past 3 years. But what's most significant, notes Matthew Kuhl, is seeing tribal members from one of the poorest counties in the country transitioning to construction jobs off the reservation in nearby towns like Rapid City and beyond. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Tribal leaders are taking part in a legislative hearing and a roundtable this week in Washington, D.C. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs will hear from tribal leaders Wednesday at a hearing about cultural items being taken and sold in the United States and overseas. The STOP Act seeks to prevent the export and sale of such items. The legislation would prohibit exportation of cultural items, increase penalties, and establish a group of tribal people dedicated to preventing future mishandling of cultural items. On Thursday, a roundtable with tribal leaders will discuss practices to prevent and treat opioid addiction in Indian country. The leader of the Hopi tribe in Arizona is expressing disappointment in a recent federal recommendation to lift a 20-year ban on uranium mining near the Grand Canyon. Chairman Herman Honani says the thought of reversing the ban is indefensible. The Grand Canyon is a sacred area to Hopi people. The tribe not only would like the area protected, but holds the position that the federal government should clean up existing mining sites before promoting new ones. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has proposed lifting the ban as part of the Trump administration's energy development efforts. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, promoting heart health. Information on helping prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes at aaip.org/million-hearts.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Shia Lucero says it's her purpose in life to educate people. She did just that at a recent TEDx Albuquerque talk as she explained her reaction to an unprovoked racist incident in a public place. She reflects on how traditional teachings helped temper the rage she felt. A similar opportunity presented itself when she heard a local TV weatherman express an uninformed opinion live on air as he watched Pueblo dancers sharing a bit of their culture. We'll hear about both of these incidents this hour and learn a little bit more about our native in the spotlight, Shia Lucero. We also want to hear from you as we go. You can call in anytime. 1-800-996-2848 is our number, or you can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And right here in Studio 49 with us today is Shia Lucero. She's the owner and operator of Earth and Floral Designs in Laguna, New Mexico. And she is Acoma Pueblo and Laguna Pueblo. Shia, it's our pleasure to have you here with us today. Welcome to these Native airwaves.
Hi, Tara. Thank you for having me.
And Shia, is there anything you'd like to say to your community or a greeting that you'd like to send out to those folks who are closest to you?
Hi to my daughter, who wanted to be here in the studio today, but she and my parents are listening at home. My brother is here in the studio, and my husband and son are at work, so hello to them, too.
Well, very nice. And Shia, you were asking yourself, why am I their native in the spotlight? And there's a lot of things you've done in your life, and I think this is a very special moment that we get to have here and there to sit down with somebody who is doing things in their community or has important things to say or reminders about who we are as Indigenous people. And something similar happened. You were also chosen to be a person to stand up on a stage and do a TED Talk. And Shia, I understand this was actually one of your biggest dreams. And so take us to that moment of trying to figure out, you know, what are you going to say to hundreds of people and why it's important that we hear all kinds of voices when we think about people who have knowledge or something important to say.
Well, being a TEDx speaker has always been one of on my bucket list. And when I got a text saying, you know, we're nominating you to be a speaker, I was excited. And I didn't realize the process of becoming a TEDx speaker. It's a lot of prep. And in my interviews with the producers and some of the volunteers with TEDx ABQ, I really did not know what to talk about because, as I told Beth Haley, who's the executive producer of TEDx ABQ, that I know a lot of a lot of things. I know a little bit of a lot of things, but I'm not an expert in one single thing. And so she had me in one of my interviews go through my journey, my life journey, which has been, I guess, very different than a typical Native American person. I've been afforded a lot of various opportunities, and she she was telling me, she goes, you know, she goes, you're a, you know, awesome woman. And I was like, okay, but what do I talk about? And it was just trying to pinpoint the subject. And so I wrote a speech. She said, just do some free flow writing. And when I presented it to her, she says, well, you know, there's some good points and there's some, you know, things we could leave out in your speech. But what's something that's happened to you that has had a big impact in your life just recently? And then that's when the incident that happened by the elevator in after a national conference in Minnesota last November. And I told her, I've been really lucky that I've never been openly confronted with racism. And it wasn't until that point where it was after the elections, it seemed like everybody was just letting all their racist views out. And, you know, being a person with the skin color I am, it was almost frightening to have to be in public because I didn't know how the public was going to react to me. And so when I was confronted by this, this mother with her three daughters, it was, that's when Beth said, you have to include that in your talk.
Let's hear a little bit of this. And you're taking us to that moment, to some of your TEDx Albuquerque talk from September. And I understand it was definitely an emotional part of your talk when you had to describe waiting for that elevator at the conference. You were with your family, and as you said, another family was there for a dance competition. They came up behind you, and here's where your talk takes off from there.
The door opens. The girls rush past us. Excuse me, we were here first, my mother says. The girl's mother says, oh, they're late. Sees the empty wheelchair, says, besides, you're not crippled, you can wait. My mom and my son help my dad onto the elevator, and she turns to the girls and says, we're elders. Weren't you taught to let elders go first? Door closes. The mother turns on me. I can't believe you say respect your elders when you're a bunch of uneducated Indians. Your elder wasn't crippled. I can't believe you brown people think you run this country. All I could do was stare at her, put my daughter behind me, and say nothing. We get on the elevator, and she continues yelling at me. Quit staring at me. I don't need no damn voodoo curse put on me. The door closes. The girls are looking on their phones. They don't look up. One smirks. So I say, maybe you girls need to learn how to be on time to things. It would prevent undue stress. And it's real unfortunate you had to see how racist your mother truly is. Good luck with your competition.
And Shai, there is a lot of emotion in that. And I think just even hearing some of that and what you faced and how you handled it is really important. But you have a way of telling a story that takes you right to that moment. I feel like I was in that elevator with you. And what was the reaction after that when you took what some might say a higher road? You didn't go off, start cussing around or threatening people, but you used it, it seems, as a learning moment.
Well, my daughter was with me, and I'm grateful that she was with me. It also hurts that she had to see that. And so my whole idea of using it as a teaching moment was to protect her. Because I told my dad later, I said, I think that you would have probably had to bail me out because I was so angry. I had never been faced with anything like that before. And when I saw my dad, as we came off the elevator, all I did was cry. And in my TED talk, I think about what my initial reaction was. And I state in my TED talk, honestly, I wanted to punch that woman. and I wanted her to physically feel how much her words hurt me. But then, as I've gone through a lot of my life and been reflecting a lot on teachings from my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, he taught me when I was 9 years old that whenever you do something wrong, a mark is left on your hands. And at that point, I looked at my hands and I'm like, do I really need a mark like that on my hands to react to this woman? And I didn't. I just tried to keep my cool. And it was like my grandfather was there right beside me saying, Baba, you better be careful about what you're going to do next. I think if I was younger, I would have reacted totally differently. But because I've gotten older and become more aware and willing to think about those teachings from my grandparents and my elders, that's how I reacted the way I did.
And Shai, I do appreciate you being truthful and honest. And you know, those emotions that we feel, especially being a mother in that kind of situation. And I think the big lesson, we're also going to talk about another incident about educating people. But I think the big lesson is we choose how we react. We can either crumble and react in a negative way, or we can react and maybe turn something dark, bring some light to it. And you rely a lot on your culture for this and even the teachings of the people who are close to you. I'm hearing a lot of Native values in what you're sharing today. And folks, if there's anything you'd like to share with Shai, you can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. She's our Native in the Spotlight. We're going to hear more about the work she does. But, you know, when it does come to what you were raised with, how you were taught, has there ever been a moment where you turned to some of those values that your elders taught you to get through a situation? If you'd like to share a little bit of that, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Shai, talk to me more about how we choose, you know, how we react, even to very harsh racism.
Well, I think the whole point of my TED Talk was initially they wanted me to talk about tolerance. And then in the end, what came out of it was that we're always going to be faced with life that may not go as we planned. And like you stated, that we can either figure out how we're going to adapt or how we're going to change. And one of the things I talk about in my speech is that I wanted to be a doctor. I'm 5 years old. I saw a monster on Sesame Street get treated by a doctor, and I thought that was the most fabulous thing. And that was my goal from 5 years old, was to become a doctor. But college life, it didn't go according to plan. And I state where the moment that I became pregnant, I knew that I was not going to be a doctor because I had already taken a personal vow to myself that I was not going to raise a child while going through medical school. And it's not, I wasn't going to blame my son for coming in, you know, into this world. That was not his choice. I've never, ever blamed him. But what I did was I adapted. I changed. I realized that I had been studying the traditional medicine of the Pueblo people, the medicinal plants, since I was about, I guess, 13 years old. And I'm like, well, I can learn about those medicinal plants. And then I thought about, well, you know, I'm learning about the plants. What's another way that I can, you know, add on to that knowledge? And that's when the Curandismo program at UNM, their certificate program came up. And so my mother and I went on that year-long journey to study Curandismo medicine. And so it's, so in a way, I'm not necessarily a doctor with a white coat. I'm, you know, a healer with my bag of plants and herbs and homeopathy and that kind of message or that kind of medicine. And so it's a different type of medicine, and it's just all about adapting and changing, and I guess coming, learning to love yourself enough that, you know, okay, life's not going the way I planned. Well, let's see how we can tweak it a bit to make it a little less stressful. But, you know, I'm not all perfect, and then nothing, my life isn't perfect whatsoever. But I've learned that I've got to adapt and change to a lot of things.
And with this change in your path, it brought you to something. And this is a dialogue that we've gotten in, that we've jumped into on our program before about, we're natural born scientists. We're observers. We adapt, and we also keep a history of our environment and how it evolves. And so, Shaye, and you also studied the sciences. And so I'd like you to open up that side of the discussion of who we are as Indigenous people and how science comes so naturally. And a lot of times we're distanced from that, or information that we have isn't, you know, taken as scientific evidence. And then we're trying to get our young people involved in some of the sciences. And it isn't until that moment somebody says, hey, you're a natural born scientist. One of the best scientific labs you've ever been in is your grandma's kitchen. And so let's open up that side of things. And folks, again, if there's anything that you'd like to pick up on that you're hearing as we visit with Shaye Lucero, you can join us at 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Shaye, take us there.
Well, I'm a self-described nerd. I love math. I love science. I am a huge geek. And I didn't come to accepting that until I would say probably college. Before that, it was science really wasn't something that was promoted in school. You were, most Native kids are pushed towards athletics. Well, I was not athletic whatsoever. I did play golf in high school, but I got made fun of for that too. But it was, I was always the nerd. I loved being in the lab. I loved, you know, being precise in my measurements and, you know, running DNA tests for my science fair project in high school. And it wasn't until I became a part of an organization called ACES, the American Indian Science and Engineering Society, that there I was among my people. It was okay for me to be a nerd. It was okay for me to be a scientist. But at the time, when I was young, when I was about 13, ACES was mainly, science, math, engineering. And it wasn't until recently that they've kind of started to accept traditional knowledge, traditional scientific knowledge. And so you see it now at National Conference, where a lot of these student presenters or even some of these professional presenters are presenting ideas in traditional knowledge. And it's taken, 20 some years for even our own society, for our own people to accept that. Now, it's still not widely accepted in science academia. When I started studying the medicinal plants, I wanted to see if I could get an independent study credit at the college that I was at. And they said, well, that's not really a research project. That's more of an educational project. But now I bet if I went back to the college and said, oh, I presented the exact same thing, they would be like, oh, yes, you can have independent study. We'll get you a fellowship. We'll get you this. So it's really changed. It's really changed quite a bit. But I think a lot of it stems from my parents making sure that we explored where we came from. So we spent a lot of time at national parks. We spent a lot of time roaming the hills of Acoma and Laguna, looking at the rocks, grinding rocks together on the sandstone to see what color, pigments, things that came up, picking so-called weeds, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was, I think that's where our children are lacking, is that they're not exposed to nature as much as, you know, I was, or even my little family is now.
Sure. And sometimes sending a kid outside to play is seen as punishment, far different from the way a lot of people grew up. And folks, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to adding you to the conversation today as we talk with Shae Lucero. And Shae, tell me what happens when you finally realize the simple things that we're doing in our communities is science, especially our Native communities. What changes?
Well, I think what changes is that our people do accept that traditional traditional knowledge is science. That's what I had come to that realization. And that when we do return to something like using the medicinal plants, we become healthier. I get a lot of people stopping me in the grocery store saying, Shae, I've got this kind of congestion. And then they'll describe, you know, their mucus or whatever they're expelling. Like, oh, you need to use this medicine or this plant or this. And I think when we start accepting that traditional knowledge, that we become a healthier people. I mean, our ancestors, you know, you and I, we have Puebloan ancestors that were in Chaco Canyon, Mesa Verde. They were scientists. They were astronomers. They marked the sun. They watched the solstice. The buildings are aligned in a mathematical direction. The engineering that went behind the architecture. I mean, just, you know, thinking about Chaco Canyon, there's science in our blood, and we just need our people and our youth to realize that, you know, that it is in our blood, that we do have that running in our genes somewhere.
And maybe this is something you've shared with the young people in your life, or hearing this, you can't wait to talk with them. Join our conversation today. Share what you're thinking. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to pause for a moment to let you know what we are planning tomorrow on our electronic talking circle. But while we do, we invite you to call in and join us in this conversation. We are visiting with our native in the spotlight, Shae Lucero, from Acoma and Laguna Pueblos. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848, or send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We look forward to what you want to add to the hour. Masculinity is not wrong. It's an important aspect of life for Native men. But there are times when negative masculinity can get in the way of living a healthy life. On our next Native America Calling, we gather a panel of men to talk about healthy masculinity and some warning signs for when it can lead to damaging behavior. We hope you'll join us.
Support for this program provided by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. For more information and resources, including member benefits and discounts, AARP advocacy, and more, go to aarp.org. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, advising us all to protect the circle of life. Help prevent the spread of the flu by getting a flu vaccine each year. Learn more at aaip.org. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we're glad you are a part of our discussion today. And if you'd like to get the dialogue started on a particular issue, reach out and tell us about it. What conversations are missing in your Native community? Shoot us an email at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And today we're featuring our Native in the Spotlight, Shae Lucero. She's a businesswoman, a mother, a former Miss Indian World, and she's also a scientist. She's also got a gift for informing people about Native culture with dialogue and humor. And if what Shae is talking about is resonating with you, or you have some words of advice or encouragement, give us a call and share. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And it's our pleasure to say hello again to Shae, who is joining us here in Studio 49. And she comes to us from Acoma and Laguna Pueblo. Shae, thank you for being with us. And we're going to go straight to the phone lines. We have Helen, who would like to talk with you. She is in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Thank you for giving us a call, Helen. You're on air.
Thank you for taking my call. My mom and my auntie, who died from old age, they were natural scientists who did remedies from natural plants. And there's a natural plant in Yupik we call Jaihluk that is a natural remedy for cuts and for rheumatitis, and even to drink for, like, to if you had digestive problems. And one thing is that all our people that knew all these scientific remedies from the earth, they're all gone. And I wanted to ask how we who are left behind can restart what you're doing. That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Great to hear from you there in Bethel, Alaska. Again, you can join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Shae, what a wonderful call that we had out of Bethel. And the way I understand it, the reason these things keep going on is because sharing knowledge, even across tribal nations. And so go ahead, talk to Helen.
Hi, Helen. I think that a lot of times we become stingy with our knowledge. We have this Eurocentric thinking of, you know, I have to be smarter than the other person. Whereas if you really go back and you think about all the traditional teachings where, of course, there were things that were not shared, you know, for, you know, medicinal purposes or religious purpose. They were, you just don't share it. But there's a lot of general knowledge that that is shared with each other. That's like the plants. And one of the things that I did was I worked with my tribes and the tribal councils and the elders of my community to create a booklet on medicinal plants of the Acoma and Laguna Pueblos. And it has text in it that is, I guess, authorized by the councils at the time that doesn't divulge any of that religious information, but it's general knowledge of the medicinal plants. And that is one thing that I feel our people could go back to. And again, it comes back to talking to one another. I mean, we've become so reliant on these cell phones, these tablets, to communicate with one another, yet nobody sits around like grandma's table or our kitchen table and has a conversation anymore. I'm lucky I live right next door to my parents, and we try to have dinner every night with each other. So all of us, my parents, my children, my husband, my brother, we all sit around the table and we have a conversation. And that's how it was in the past. So I think a lot of it comes down to conversing with one another and sharing that knowledge and not being stingy with that knowledge.
And I think something that we hear a lot of times is when we do rethink, you know, what are we doing? How are we spending our time? And then when we think about factoring in the knowledge that our family holds and you know, the encyclopedias that are floating in the brains of our elders, sometimes that reminder leads us to some good things. And so it's interesting to think about some of this. And one of the honors that we do have here at Native America Calling is understanding our tribal communities. And sometimes it's through the topics, through the music, as well as books that are written. But sometimes you got to take it one Native at a time to understand about our communities. And today, through our Native in the Spotlight, we're taking the time to learn a lot about different aspects. And if there's anything, folks, that you hear in the conversation that you also want to add to, or maybe share a perspective from your own tribal community, or Shaye reminds you of somebody in your own community that you appreciate the knowledge she brings, or just those reminders we have to remember who we are as Indigenous people, you can share. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Let's go ahead and take another call. We're going to say hi to Strong Tree in Durango, Colorado, tuned in on KSUT. Strong Tree, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hi, Shaye.
Hi.
It's actually Song
it's
Tree.
It's Song Tree.
Song Tree.
Yes.
Like a song and a tree. Yeah. Song Tree Paiochi. I love you, Shaye. And I love that you speak out. You're one of my most favorite Native women because our stories do need to be heard, like all of the challenges that we face on a daily basis and the effort that we have to make to inform and educate and champion our children on a daily basis and the people that they grow up with. So I encourage you to keep doing that.
Thank you.
I have to do that myself with my children. And what motivated me to call in is the story that I have with my middle son, Cash Ayochi. He attends school in Bloomfield, and recently he's always been a superior student, always gets A's and B's. He's always been an athlete, always competitive, and when he was sick, he had already won 10 saddles in the rodeo arena, and that's an amazing accomplishment. And he didn't grab my attention until fifth grade when his substitute teacher called me into a meeting and said, you know, your son could be gifted if he would just focus. You know, he's always bothering other students and flipping water bottles and tapping pencils. And I was lucky enough to have mentors and people that I could go to and talk about giftedness. So I consulted different people, and they said, yeah, you need to have him tested. He's probably gifted, and you just don't know it. And a year later and 50 meetings later from, you know, the teacher to the Board of Education, I was able to get him tested for giftedness, and he did test gifted. And so I learned a lot about that and how the family dynamic changes and how you have to support them, because our Native youth are doing big things now, and they're going to, you know, be leaders of our nation, and they're going to be doctors and entrepreneurs and own their own galleries and be business people. So I really appreciate you, Cheyenne, for the things that you do and, you know, the voice that you have.
Aw, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Cheyenne, any thoughts for her?
I think that she is right. We need to become advocates for our children. There's a group here in Albuquerque, I think they're called EPICS, and they always, my parents worked a lot with them because my brother had ADHD, and he also had a learning disability. And they told my parents, they taught them how to become advocates for their children. And they said, it's all right if you become a parent from hell, you know, because then you're really advocating and learning about your children. And so through that, my parents were able to find the resources that were available for my brother and to help with his learning disability. But I think a lot of times we do want our kids to be doctors, lawyers. But my dad always says, you know, whatever job you choose, you have to do it the best way possible. Whether you're cleaning, you know, being a janitor, whether you are being a housekeeper, or you're being working in customer service, whatever you do, be the best you can be in that aspect. Because, you know, we need all these different jobs. But we also need to respect and appreciate those people who do those jobs. Because honestly, I wouldn't want to cook the hamburger that I order. But I appreciate the cook that's cooking the hamburger that I'm going to order. And we need to respect that. And a lot of times we have lost that respect. And so it's good that as parents we become advocates for our children so that they can become the best whatever career they want to do can be. And in regards to, you know, I have an affinity for those students that are at risk. I was praised because I had, you know, good grades. I was, you know, science fair nerd. I won these awards. But it wasn't until I worked for a media arts company that I realized that a lot of our at-risk youth weren't receiving the praise that they got. And one, it was because they were very artistic. And we often forget about the arts for our children. We think about, you know, the STEM fields, but we never encourage our students to go into the arts. And it wasn't until recently with schools like IAIA that have encouraged our Native people to go into arts. But, you know, in that aspect, art is a whole different community now. It's not like in my grandmother's time where she made pottery and sold them on the side of Route 66. It's become a business. And so you have to know about the entrepreneur part of being an artist. You have to know that you are worth what you put in, you know, when you price your piece of art. You know, people, a lot of times our people want things for free or they want it really inexpensively. And they say, well, why are your things so expensive? Well, it's because I know my worth. My time goes into that. And so there's a different side of artistry that is very different these days than from my grandmother's time. And so I don't know. I have a big affinity for children in just trying to help them figure out their path in life and that it's okay to change. And that's based upon, you know, my own life growing up. And so I'm still growing up. And I think that if someone can look at my life and see that, okay, Shai didn't become a doctor. She adapted. She changed. She, you know, shifted a little bit. And now this is how she's going. I think that if I can influence some children, some people, you know, our people, for them to use my life example as a way of changing and adapting, that I think I've done a pretty good job of being here on Earth.
And you're about to tell us about another chapter in your life that happened recently where you did just that and invited someone, come here, come learn. Let's get into that. But folks, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls. Maybe you just want to make a statement on life. Shia reminded you of something. Or maybe you just need to shake a finger and remind people about some values that we need to remember. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Let's go ahead and say hi to Isaac, who called us out of the Albuquerque area in New Mexico. He's listening on KUNM. Isaac, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Hello.
Hi, Isaac.
Oh, hi. Yes, this may be something that is off the subject, and if it is, that's fine. But I'd like to ask about protection of sacred sites that are not on the reservation, not in the direct control of the tribes. In particular, Petroglyph National Monument, which has had two major arterial roads put through it since it was made a monument. And it is a sacred site, as far as I know, to all 19 Pueblos. And the managing agencies have continued to insist on imposing urban recreation on this sacred landscape, although the All Indian Pueblo Council and the Pueblos, et cetera, have made it very clear in writing that that is not appropriate for an area that's treated like a church. And yet it just keeps coming back and back. It seems like it's so hard to get through. And I wonder if the speaker has any advice on getting through to the dominant culture on these sacred site issues.
All right, Isaac, thank you for your call here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Shia, go ahead, talk to Isaac.
Hi, Isaac. I actually worked for the All India Pueblo Council during that time of the Paseo del Norte construction. And it was a formidable time in which that we did our best to educate people about Pueblos. And for hundreds of years, a lot of our Pueblo teachings have been held in secrecy because for the protection of our tradition and our culture. So when we have visitors to the area, they think that, they look at the beauty of Acoma and they see, maybe see us as a tourist destination, but they don't realize that we're living and breathing people. We're a living and breathing culture. And so during my time at AIPC, we did a lot or tried to do our best about educating people. And you're not going to get through to everybody. My elders have always said that, why do we need a church to go pray when I can step outside of my house and face the sun and say my prayer? Or I can go outside my house at any time of the day and put down my cornmeal and say a prayer. I don't need a building to tell me where it's sacred. And that's just part of our teachings, part of our traditional teachings in all indigenous cultures, is that you can pray anywhere you want. But a lot of times is that people aren't educated enough about our own Pueblo culture, about the Pueblo people that have lived here, that are still living here, that are living and breathing here. And it's ignorance, it's lack of education, and it's unfortunate that we're not going to hit and influence everybody. It's difficult. I drive on Paseo del Norte and I say a prayer driving through because I know that, I just drove over, what could have been a place of prayer that our medicine people had stood on. So it's hard. It's really hard.
And I think something that our caller made me think of a program that we did not too long ago about recognizing the indigenous people of the land, of all these cities. And hundreds of years ago, all of this was indigenous land and people connected to it. And even though there's political boundaries, there are many sacred places that are in the middle of cities. I think we really saw a lot of this with what happened in North Dakota, the prayer camps that were there. It's off tribal property, but we heard from so many people how important these spaces were. And so I think when we start hearing some of those stories, we start thinking. And I think that adds to adding this kind of knowledge. And Shae, I've hinted at an incident a couple of times, and I want you to tell us about a special guest you had at Feast Day and why you invited them. Go ahead.
Well, during the Balloon Fiesta, there was a meteorologist from one of the local television stations that had made an uneducated remark about the Pueblo people. And there was a young woman on Facebook who had taken a screenshot, a video screenshot of that newscast, and she posted it on Facebook. And it was shared hundreds of times, and the words that were people were stating were of anger, and it was about dancers that were dancing deer, one of our Pueblo winter dances at the Balloon Fiesta. And I initially wanted to be angry too, but I decided to sleep on it. And the next morning I wrote a message, and it was to Mr. Brian Morton from KOAT7. And I said, you know, I initially wanted to respond in anger, but I think that it would be best if, you know, we sat down and had a conversation so that I can maybe try to educate you on Pueblo culture. And then a friend of mine, she suggested, well, Laguna's last feast day is coming up. Why don't you invite him? So I sent Byron a message, and I said, Byron, I said, you know, thank you for your apology, because he had written an apology on the Facebook page. But of course, our people that wasn't enough. And so I said, you know, I appreciate your apology, but, you know, why don't you come out to Laguna and we'll give you some Pueblo 101 lessons. And it wasn't more than maybe an hour after I had pressed send on that message that he called me on my phone, and we had this extremely long conversation, probably about 45 minutes, talking about Pueblo culture. And he was so worried about how he had hurt, you know, the dancers and our people. And so he accepted my invitation. And he said, well, I'll be out on this day. And so he came. He came to the Parahi Feast. And it was just an amazing time to sit with him at our dinner table with my parents and my daughter. And we talked about Pueblo 101. We talked about the meaning of the dance. We talked about, you know, the different tribes that were here or that are here in New Mexico. And then we took him to the village. And the first thing we did was I asked my dad, I said, shall we take him through the village first? He goes, no, let's feed him before we send him to the wolves. And so we took him to our friends at the Saracenos in Parahi, and we fed him. And the people there, the family there had seen the newscast, and they had seen the newscast, but they opened their home to him, and they fed him, and then they gave him advice like they would any their family members who had done wrong. So it was really good to hear that they were also being a part of his healing process and trying and educating him. Then we took him to the plaza and we showed him the dances, the Follow the Leader dance, the Harvest dance. And then we took him into the shrine, and then he told our governor why he was there, what he had said, and the governor had a conversation with him. But it was all a conversation. It wasn't by social media. It wasn't via text. It wasn't over the phone. It was sitting down or standing with him and talking to him one-on-one. That conversation or that art of conversing with people is lost with our people.
So basically you took him to what we as Pueblo people experience when we're naughty or we do wrong, and you're going to have a conversation with about 12 people to make you rethink what you did and get you centered again. And so it's been a pleasure, Shae. We're out of time. Can you believe how fast this hour has gone? But I think we can all walk away with a lot of understanding and lessons learned. And so I'm curious, after you've sat with us an hour today, hearing from one individual, what are you thinking? What more needs to be said about how we are maneuvering through our tribal communities, or maybe those conversations that are missing, or those simple reminders that you think more people in Native America could use, as well as our neighbors? Folks, you are always welcome to reach out to us, share your thoughts. Do it right now on our website. Either go to NativeAmericaCalling.com or go to our Facebook or send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. I do appreciate everybody who called in today, and sorry for those callers we weren't able to weave in. Send us an email, comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. Thanks again to our Native in the Spotlight, Shae Lucero. We are back again tomorrow with a show about toxic masculinity and how some people are using that phrase to describe some troubling aspects of how people treat each other. And don't forget to tune in this Friday. We're going to be live from the second annual Indigenous Comic-Con. It's Indigenous Comic-Con 2. It's taking place at Isleta Pueblo, and we'll be bringing you live coverage. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thanks again. And visit us at NativeAmericaCalling.com.
Keshe, Quajon E. Bequin, a whole eat there a mess. It's done on odds and acrylic and astems and top of the Kayasto, Tepic and a don't know health insurance, a wastelick and a dodge. This yam on the 18 hour. Look at December 15th, Nana Yasti in the Ganda. It's 1-800-318-2596 and Ben and Arkin and Diet at the Biston. go.cms.gov/native-health-on-hour. Look at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Don't know Ben and Ito Lokanawa. Elakwa.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, working to empower K-12 schools to strengthen health and safety policies through the School Health Index self-assessment. Schools with 50% or more American Indian or Alaska Native student enrollment are eligible to participate and receive funding. Information available by emailing Jamie McDaniel at jmcdaniel@aaip.org.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.